The president was greeted by veteran Soviet ambassador
to offer condolences on the death of Leonid Brezhnev.
The operation is what's crucial, because what we do is for the good of the many. Don't let your conscience get us killed.
If you tell her now, it will all blow up.
But at least she'll know who she is.
Every move you make.
This is the West Coast Project podcast for the Americans. My name is Mike, and I'm here with Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
All right. Well, we just watched the first episode of season three of The Americans. What'd you think of it?
Well, I have to say, I really loved it. I was impressed. What did you think?
I thought it was good. It was a good start. A lot of people are starting to say that it's looking like season two again. It kind of starts the same way with the big action right off the bat in the first episode.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was kind of shocking seeing what happened with Elizabeth. I wasn't expecting that. And because it was so dark outside, I didn't realize who she was getting into a fight with until she almost killed him.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing, that fight.
Yeah, that was incredible.
You know, I also tried to prep myself for this season by reading up and kind of watching some of the old stuff from last season, season two. It kind of reminded me that we have to remember that the American people, the American CIA and FBI agents are looking for these people all the time. Like, it's not like they're going to be fine unless they do something to trip up and get caught. They're always being sought out by the CIA and FBI.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up because it kind of does. It seems like the urgency of that initial scene kind of brings that to mind naturally, the way it was written. And I felt that, you know, and I remembered how we, a few years ago, the United States exposed a bunch of Russian agents and sleeper agents, who had been living in this country forever, for like 20 years and more in some cases. And, I thought about how stressful that must be to just be under constant threat of exposure and the stakes being so high, you know, because if they get caught, they're not just going to go to jail. They're not just going to get arrested. I mean, you know, that's it. That's it for them.
Yeah, they get a big fine, right, too. But just think about your own life. Like, you work hard, you come home from work, and maybe you have family or something, but you might also just want like some downtime, some alone time. They don't have any of that crap. They got, like, he's got to rush off and meet Clark to Martha. He's got to be like, he's got to live two lives and worry about getting discovered in both, almost all the time, 24 hours.
Yes.
Pretty brutal.
And I really felt sorry. Really, I sympathized with both of them so much, but especially because, you know, I've got an affinity for Philip, and I felt so much sympathy for Philip, in particular, this episode, because, I mean, it just seems to me like the guy is always on, you know, and his entanglements are romantic entanglements, and they take energy out of him, you know, it's just physical energy, you know, it just seems like such a, you know, everything's a job. It's just like what you're saying.
Who is your favorite character?
All right. Well, so my favorite character to look at, I think, just like, you know, visually, I think is probably Elizabeth, because she's pretty and her face is really interesting. Like, she looks really intense. But I think that my favorite character as it's written, that's a main character, is Philip. And then my favorite character overall, just because of the stuff he says, is Henry.
I can tell that from what you've said before.
Yeah.
About Henry. My favorite character is Philip. I don't like Elizabeth. I just don't like her that much.
Well, okay, so I know what you mean, because, I mean, I don't think she's supposed to be likable. She's really harsh, and but I'm surprised to hear you say that, though, because I hadn't heard you have many opinions about her at all, and so I'm surprised, but I agree with you.
Well, so even though I say they don't have much downtime, this first scene is Elizabeth taking a bath and kind of relaxing. Do you think she's taking that bath to prepare for a mission or to recover from a mission?
I think that she's probably preparing for a mission. I think she's going out to meet that CIA agent. But here was the thing that I took away from that soak in the tub. So she, you know, we open there and she's soaking in the tub. And the first thing I thought was, oh, good. You know, I mean, they're showing us more of their house. So we're seeing, because I haven't seen anybody soak in the tub before. And then when I saw her kind of like recline in the tub, I thought, oh, okay, well, I thought that, you know, they weren't going to have too many more nude scenes and that kind of stuff. And I was like, okay, well, I guess, you know, maybe that they kind of tame it down later. And then when I realized what she was doing, I was like, wow, you know, this lady, she doesn't get a rest. Like in her mind, laying back in the tub and soaking brought to her a memory of literally throwing Paige into a situation without any support. And, you know, that is apparently her mothering style. So it's not too far a stretch to imagine that at some point in time, you know, she will be willing to throw Paige in, you know, to the water to sink or swim again.
Yeah, and that's actually not one of the reasons I dislike her. I actually admire that she's toughening up Paige for life. Like, okay. I don't think I'd ever throw my kid into a pool. I don't have kids, but if I had one, or even a niece or nephew or something, you know, somebody cared about. But mm-hmm. I would encourage them to get in the water. She pushed it a little bit of a notch farther by just tossing her in. But Paige likes her mom and loves her mom, it seems like. It doesn't seem like she's afraid of her or you know, stilted by that. But it was directly opposite of all the other moms that were, you know, passionately, like, encouraging their kids and helping them get used to the water. And she just chucked Paige right in.
Yeah. And here was the thing. She looked around to see who was looking before she did it, which I thought was really interesting. It kind of gives you a little view into her personality. Like, you know, she's always got to make sure that everything is as it should be, or as it's, you know, at least as it should seem. But then she went ahead and tossed her in there anyway. And yeah, I mean, I don't think that doesn't make me dislike her. That the idea that she would do that. What makes me dislike her is that she is so, she's so inflexible about the idea of her worldview. It makes her a great spy, and that's probably why she's so successful and she's, you know, so valued by the center, right? But it makes her a difficult person to sympathize with.
Well, let's say about our podcast here that we're gonna kind of recap the episode, and we'll do our projections and our own interpretations and maybe our spoilers of stuff we might know at the end of the podcast episode. So we'll draw a line. So if you don't want to hear what we might have seen or what we might want to project into the future, we'll make a distinction in the podcast. But okay. There is something coming up that makes me think that about this water stuff. We'll talk about it at the end of the podcast. Okay. But so you think she's in the bath before this meeting with this woman, Charlotte, for the drinks at the restaurant?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so she does that. She goes and meets this woman, Charlotte, who I guess is a CIA agent.
Right.
And Charlotte's doing all the talking, and Elizabeth's there in her John Denver wig just nodding, and Charlotte sounds like a bit of a blowhard. She's bragging about her work.
I don't know. I didn't really take it that way. I took it that Charlotte was feeling that she didn't get the credit she deserved for the work that she did, or her boss took the credit for her work, and not only took, and this was somebody who was really inept, who did work that was unintelligible. And she, when she took over and did his work for him, not only did he take credit for it, but he got a raise based on her work. And that's why she was bitter.
Yeah, and a promotion. I don't know. Yeah. It sounded like she was bragging a little bit. Like, I got everything done I was supposed to, and I was the best at it, and whatever all that was. But do you think Elizabeth is recruiting her or just sucking up information from her?
No, I think she's getting information from her. And I don't know. I mean, I think that probably for a spy, you know, there's always the opportunity to maybe recruit someone. And, you know, she might have thought that at some point in time. But, you know, as we see, that's not necessarily a good idea because Charlotte is not fully against the government. She's had a pang of guilt there.
Yeah, I'm interested in your take on this because it was a little difficult for me to capture and to wrap my head around. But she does eventually say, because she got one-upped by this guy, he got the promotion and she did all the work. She says, screw the CIA, and she hands over these names of everyone in NE and SAD. I don't know what those acronyms are. Essentially, U.S. government people working on Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. But then she goes to the bathroom, and along the way, she sees a reflection in the silver part of the payphone, almost like a guilt, like, oh, look at who you are. Look at what you've done. And she calls someone and admits that she's been a traitor.
Right.
Was that part of the plan, do you think, when she went out to dinner with Elizabeth?
No. I think she went out to dinner with Elizabeth to give her the information because she's so angry that she, you know, like what she said, screw the CIA. And I think when she started walking up the stairs, she was walking with purpose. And then she kind of got, you know, slowed down by the lady who impeded her coming down, going up. And then, boom, the phone. Yeah, and maybe if that lady hadn't been coming down, she would have walked with more purpose. She wouldn't have looked and seen her own reflection in the phone. She would have gone to the restroom, come out. Things would have been a totally different way.
So do you think she was just, do you think that drunken lady bumping into her on the stairs made her think, God, am I just a drunk in a bar now complaining about my life?
No, I don't think so. I think that it was just that one of those fluky moments. I think that she, you know, that just it just kind of happened that way. And who knows? I mean, maybe when she walked into the ladies' room, that mirror, that reflection would have done the same thing. But I think just having a moment where she could really look herself in the face and sort of, you know, that it gave her that pause of saying, okay, wait, what am I doing?
But doesn't that phone call waste her entire career?
Well, yeah, but I mean, wouldn't it be? You know, and here's what I think. I think that she's probably going to jail for what she did. Or she might be able to negotiate a deal because she was handing them Elizabeth. You know, I don't know what her future is, but I do know that typically people who are chosen to be government agents are picked based upon some very specific personality traits, among which is loyalty to your country. And so I think that probably somebody with a personality type that would put her in the position of being a CIA agent, that she would have a tremendous amount of guilt, unbearable guilt, for doing something like what she was doing, and that she would probably rather choose, you know, if her conscience was really bothering her, if she, you know, she had that second thought to go ahead and put an end to it, put a stop to it before she was able to.
Well, yeah. I guess we kind of saw that with Stan. He didn't do the bad deed, but he stopped himself kind of exactly like you just described in season two.
Yeah.
But whoever she calls, you know, she can't get Elizabeth to stay long enough for them to come and catch her. Elizabeth's tipped off to something or either that or she's bored to death. She wants to leave right away. But she gets out of there before that phone call can get those guys there. Now, the other confusing thing, Jamie, in this scene was that, like, Gad and his buddy were riding around that night. And I thought, well, okay, is that Gad and his partner coming? But it wasn't. It was two other guys, right?
Well, okay, so, yeah, no, here's what happened. She called. Charlotte called and literally dropped a dime. That was a dime she put into that paper, which I thought was really cool. She called and reported this. And when she came down and she was trying to convince Elizabeth to stay, it's because she knew the police were coming. She knew the CIA was coming.
Right.
She called them to come and get her.
Right.
And when she was trying to convince Elizabeth to stay, Elizabeth picked up on this and thought it was unusual. And that's why she was just kind of like, oh, okay. Well, no, we can always eat together next time. And then she got the heck out of Dodge. And the next time you saw Elizabeth, she's switching her coat, turning her coat around. She turned her coat inside out. She threw away her glasses. She's trying to get the heck out of there quickly, but not so quickly that she's noticed walking, you know, down the street through the neighborhood, because the phone call that was placed, Gad and his partner, and that was Gad, by the way, in the car, and his partner were not just tooling around in there. They were called. And that's why when Elizabeth was walking down that neighborhood street and you saw these cars rush by and screech on, you know, two wheels, turn the corner, and they're going in the direction that she was walking opposite of, they were trying to find her.
Yeah, that's right. So it was two cars. It was Gad and his partner in one and the other two guys in the other car, probably.
Yeah, whoever it was in the other car. But yeah, but then, you know, Gad and his partner saw her walking, and you know they nearly had her. But yeah, but Elizabeth picked up on it, and Charlotte, that's the cavalry came because Charlotte called them.
Yeah. Just was trying to connect because we saw the first car stop, and two guys got out, and they were not Gad and his partner; they were two other guys, two other FBI guys, I guess.
Okay.
So, but Elizabeth pounds the hell out of Gad. I mean, she's like supposedly 5'3 and 100 pounds, and she smashes him in the face before the other guy can get her, and the other guy jumps on her and gets Elizabeth pretty bad. But she rolls out of the way when the motorcycle comes sliding at them, and the motorcycle, I guess, hits the guy. But
right.
That in the whole process of all that, she loses the names that she had gotten from Charlotte.
Yeah.
On a list of, on a piece of paper that was in her pocket.
Yeah.
And that was that. She fought pretty tough though for a little 5'3" 100 pounder.
Right. And she should. She's a spy. She's trained. You know, and so she should be able to, but he very nearly got her. I mean, she was almost a goner. He'd almost choked the life right out of her. You know, or at least gotten her to pass out. So she was almost done for, and if it hadn't been for, you know, for the motorcycle coming by, you know, the episode could have maybe taken a different turn. She could have been captured.
She's a survivor.
Yeah, she's definitely a survivor.
So then we see the EST meeting, the Earhart Seminars training meeting. I read up some more about this, Jamie. These trainings were like, according to Wikipedia, they were 60 hours over 2 weekends. So Stan and Philip are at this meeting, and if 60 hours over 2 weekends is like 15 hours a day on Saturday and Sunday for 2 weekends, you think they went to that damn thing for 15 hours straight?
Well, that would explain the expressions on their faces when they left.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that would definitely explain their expressions, because they didn't look too happy.
So here's what EST is. It's I guess we hear the instructor say, to really experience life, you have to stop being reasonable all the time and accept what you've got. And so that was in the episode that we watched. But also I read a little bit more about it. And again, according to Wikipedia, they say during the training, it becomes glaringly clear that most of our personal problems begin with not keeping our agreements and not being true to our words, saying one thing and doing another. Became obvious that much of human misery is a function of broken agreements, not keeping your word or someone else not keeping their word. And isn't that a bit of a mirror to the show, how everybody's somebody else in the spy world?
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, it is. It's kind of it's kind of like the whole, like really the whole show. Yeah, because nobody here really is kind of, you know, what they. But then, you know, I guess it's kind of a reflection of the world too, because so many people are not what they seem at all on the surface. You dig a little bit beneath and you find out a whole other thing.
Very true. But so Stan and Philip are buddies enough now to spend a 15-hour day together?
Well, I mean, they're neighbors. That, you know, this is, you're talking about Stan, who went and found Philip staying in a motel somewhere, used his CIA information seeking powers to find Philip when Philip and Elizabeth were separated back in season two, and just go have a beer with him because he was upset about his own situation with his wife. And so, yeah, I mean, oh, actually, no, he was upset about his partner dying, is what it was. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I think they're good friends in a way.
Well, I guess maybe. But I think Stan has an ulterior motive too. I think he's angling to get back with his ex.
Oh, for sure. That's the reason they went to the seminar, for sure. But I think that he did it with Philip because he knows he can kind of rope Philip in and get him to do fun things or unfun things together because they're friends.
Jesus, that's friendship.
I agree.
So next we see the Russian guy that's been captured by these Afghan fighters, and Oleg and Arkady are watching it, I guess, from their office safe. Now, Oleg and Arkady are in the U.S. in the embassy, or are they in Russia somewhere?
Yeah, see, I don't know. I mean, there wasn't really much of a sense of place communicated there, and so I'm not sure. But it seemed to me as though they might be in Russia, but they could have been just right there at the residence. I don't know.
So they make the argument that we can't stay free of Afghanistan as Russians. We have to work to sway Afghanistan our way, just like the U.S. is doing it with a covert group of people in Afghanistan. And they say that Reagan was trying to make Afghanistan into a Vietnam for Russia, like the unwinnable war that just soaks up their resources.
Right.
And we find out Oleg thinks Russia should be out of Afghanistan because he's got a brother there.
Okay, so I wondered about that. I didn't know if it was his brother that was in Afghanistan, just any brother, or if that was his brother in the video. So you're saying it's his brother's just somewhere stationed there.
I think so. Yeah, that wasn't his brother.
Okay.
Assassinated. That was just his brother. His brother is stuck there in this miserable, unwinnable situation.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting getting to see Oleg and, you know, his opinion about what happened with Nina. And I'm really sorry that, well, number one, I'm surprised that we didn't see Nina.
Not yet.
Yeah, well, and I hope we see her, but I guess kind of, you know, our ideas and our thoughts about Oleg and Nina were kind of, they kind of bore out because he went to his father and begged his father to save her.
Right, and the other thing we learned in this scene with the Oleg and Arkady is Oleg speaks out about this in front of this woman, Tatiana. We meet this woman, Tatiana, another, I guess, Russian agent. And Arkady warns him not to speak in front of her. Like there's spydom within spydom teams. They can't be open in front of each other because some spies are more trustworthy than others.
Right, right, right. And that was interesting, too. I thought that was really interesting Oleg was just kind of like, okay, well, yeah, I mean, we have to be frank in order to do our jobs. And Arkady was just like, nah, man, you know, you need to just know somebody better before. We don't know who this one really is, kind of thing. And so, and, you know, and maybe Arkady's just, he doesn't want to get stung by the same, you know, hole twice. He doesn't want to have another experience like he had with Nina, because originally he trusted Nina. He didn't know she was a traitor.
Yeah. So you know? Philip and Stan get home to Philip's house, and Elizabeth's there putting ice on her shoulder. This is all the same night, these first scenes. Right. And they kick Stan out pretty quickly. He's bachelor Stan, man. He's open for a big night of drinking beer and hanging out, but
yeah, I thought it was really funny because he's all in the fridge, just, you know, he's, you can tell he's about to get comfortable.
Yeah. So once alone, when they're alone, Elizabeth tells Philip what happened. And Jamie, I think she's pretty tough, but I think this scene told us that she needs Philip. She kind of let him hug her, and she hugged him back a little bit. And I think she needs his comfort.
Yeah, which is nice to see that they lean on each other. And I'm glad you said that, because actually, you know, before in that scene when it was just her in the kitchen alone before Stan and Philip arrived, that's what I was thinking. Like when she was there and she was just trying to put ice on her shoulder and she was alone, I thought, you know, I guess that's kind of like, you know, a nice thing to have, even if she didn't like Philip, or even if she didn't love him, which we know, I mean, she does right now, at least she loves him. You know, it would be nice to have somebody to come home and help you out when you've just gotten the crap beaten out of you, and you're really hurt physically and, you know, scared and at risk and, you know, all of that. To have somebody to be able to come home and sympathize and, you know, help you feel better, it's got to be nice, even if it's not a, you know, traditional situation.
Yeah. That was one little hint. And then there's another little hint later on that I picked up. You might have seen some others that we'll talk about when we get to it. But these little hints that show above and beyond that she cares about him more than just play acting a marriage role in a spy game. But so the next morning, if this show has any comic relief, it's got to be Gad with this face bashed in with this super big bandage on his nose. But Stan comes to work the next day and sees Gad and his wasted face, and his partner comes in and says something about, wow, she's a pretty tough assailant for being 5'3". Stan say that? And they're talking about Elizabeth, but they don't know it's Elizabeth. But somebody says, wow, that's a pretty bad injury for somebody who was 5'3".
Yeah, I think Stan says that. Stan says that to Gad. And, did you hear what they said at the end of that introductory moment? They were agreeing that they could have been talking about the same person. They thought they might be talking about the same illegal, that they've been looking for and that who attacked him. And, I thought that was really interesting. And I'm so glad that she didn't kill him, because, you know, in that back to the first scene, the scene where she beat him up, she had the gun facing him with her hand with her finger on the trigger. She could have as easily shot him as beat him up some more and knock him out, which is what she ended up doing. But she could have shot him more easily, actually.
Yeah. I don't know why. I guess we have a lot more to see from Gad, but do you think that was compassion? Elizabeth was a little forgiving, like, no need to take this life, so I won't?
It could be, because I've noticed that with her before and with Philip too. And that's, of course, the way that spies approach things typically, is that they won't kill somebody if they don't have to. If they can get away with not killing them, then they won't. And so, you know, and she's done that before, because remember, back in season one, they were spying. They were in a neighborhood doing some surveillance, and they were in a van. It was she and Philip, and a security guard, just like one of these uniformed security guards for a neighborhood, came through, and she ended up having to kill him, and it really bothered her. You know, she didn't just kill him without thinking about it. It really bothered her. She tried not to.
Yeah, we see the human sides of all these characters. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So Gad tells Stan that Nina was convicted of espionage and treason, and Stan covers up these emotions pretty well. I mean, we can see he's touched by it. But I was reminded, Jamie, that Gad knew about Nina and Stan, huh? He knew that they were close.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said something, because I could not remember if he knew that they were actually involved. And I kept wondering in that scene, did he know? Because he seemed to be telling Stan in a way that was extra compassionate. Like he was trying to, you know, and then I think he asked him if he was okay. And so, you know, I kind of wondered, I couldn't remember if he knew or not, but there's part of me that just feels like he should assume that Stan was involved with her. you know, just because of the fact that there was a safe house. And I wondered about that, too, because, you know, Stan, during the time last season that Stan was trying to save Nina, part of his whole thing was, like, he wanted to pull her out, and Gad was saying, no, that's not what we do. We use them until we're done with them. And, but, you know, eventually at some point he said, you know, okay, we'll give you and your source a safe house.
I wonder if that's part of the training or the expectations of CIA people and spies when they going in. Like, you're going to get close to these people that you're working undercover with, you know, even the enemy. You're going to get close to the enemy. And maybe that's why he was careful in telling him about Nina being caught with this treason and essentially being either put to death or put in jail for the rest of her life. He knew that Stan would have been close to her, even if he might not have known about the romance part of it.
Well, maybe so. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe I don't know if it'll ever be, you know, a question that gets answered. But yeah, I mean, and I would imagine the same thing that, you know, when you're dealing with people on such a very personal level, you know, even if the people are odious in one sense to you, that you could end up crossing the line and you know, and maybe they do expect it. I don't know. It'd be an interesting question to have answered.
So the next thing that happens is the Gad's buddy, or his partner, comes in, and we find out that the list has been recovered. So they're checking it for fingerprints, the list that Elizabeth had. Mm-hmm. And that the assailant that punched Gad in the face has an injury on her face or jaw. And this makes Stan think. And he had just gotten back from Philip and Elizabeth, and she was holding her shoulder. Grocery bag injury on the shoulder. So I don't know if he was making that connection yet. But the very next scene we see is Elizabeth putting makeup on her face over the bruised part of her face. Right. I don't think that was apparent to Stan when he dropped when he was with Philip from the after the Est meeting. But for some reason, it seems like he's thinking about Elizabeth at this point.
Well, I don't know. But, you know, Stan is no dummy. And Stan already had suspicions about Elizabeth and Philip from the first season. And, you know, I don't put anything past him. He has proven himself to be a smart guy. He's proven himself to be a guy with good instincts. And I don't think he's thinking about Elizabeth in that light. But I don't think that it is something that his mind would not return to.
So you think just as an FBI agent, he's got this mind and he just scans his memory for face injuries. What face injuries might have crossed my path out of anyone in the world I've seen in the past week or 2 days or whenever the attack happened, and Elizabeth may have been in that inventory of people's faces.
Nope. Here's what I think. I think that Stan talked to maybe Henry, I think, in the first couple of episodes of the first season, about what led him to work for the CIA. And he said that he read the comic books. There were CIA comic books that he read, and he's got this from a very, very young age, this affinity and this natural sort of leaning toward patriotism, heroism, even though he says, you know, that they're not heroes. He literally said that, which is the first thing a hero says, you know, oh, we're not heroes. And, you know, and toward being sort of a detective. And I think he's naturally that way. And people like that, they have instincts, and they, you know, even if it's not from the perspective of thinking, you know, I'm suspicious of everybody, not necessarily that, but maybe puzzle pieces, maybe like, okay, well, I've got this thing in my head about, you know, bruises on the face, and oh, wow, isn't that interesting? My neighbor had a bruised up arm, shoulder, whatever. You know, if he had seen her with bruises on her face, maybe it would have sparked something. Not because it's suspicious, but because he's a natural detective.
Well, you're kind of saying what I meant to say. Maybe I didn't put into words what was in my head, but you just kind of described what I was trying to say.
Oh, okay.
That his personality just has the ability to match clues with reality and put them together, like a puzzle. Yeah. So that, you said it a lot better than I did.
Well, then I agree with you.
See, I can get you to agree with me one way or another. So we see Elizabeth bonding more with Paige suspiciously. Like, she's going to church with her now, and she's going to the nuclear war protest and folding the brochures and doing mailings. And at one of these meetings, it looked like one of the boys was flirting with Paige and one of the dudes was flirting with Elizabeth. Like, they each had their own little flirtation going there.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't take it that way. I thought, okay. So I think that kid is definitely a potential boyfriend for Paige. But I just thought that other dude was just like basically, kind of giving Elizabeth the eye, like as if to say, oh, kids, what are you going to do with them? Or that kind of thing. I didn't take it as him being flirtatious with her.
Okay.
But go ahead. You can say what you're going to say.
Well, that guy wasn't the Pastor Tim guy that we've seen before, is he? Or is he?
I don't know. Because he looks familiar, but he doesn't look like the guy that was on the bus that day. The one who said, oh, what are you going to do about parents? He was on the bus with Paige when they were going up to the protest. To me, that's two different guys, because there's one guy who's blonde and then there's one guy who's brunette. And,
yeah.
Okay.
I think it's important because there's a whole bunch of theories floating around on Reddit and everywhere that Pastor Tim is part of the whole KGB family to help induct people. And him and this other, the kid in his little club, and the kid, the boyfriend type guy for Paige is there to help Paige get into the KGB. Like, it's all part of the whole picture. It's not just happenstance that Paige goes to a church group and finds a cute little boyfriend. Like, that cute little boyfriend is there to get her into the family. But that's a theory. That's a floating around theory, and maybe I just spoiled my own warning that we wouldn't do this till the end of the show. But I've read that now more than once. So I don't know. What do you think about it?
Well, I will say this: if that is what they're planning to do, they're planning it very, very well. And the reason I'm saying that is because there was a look. There was a look between Elizabeth and whoever that guy was, the blonde guy, that you took as being maybe a little bit of a flirtation, that I took as being maybe some sort of like, oh, kids will be kids kind of thing.
But isn't that a flirtation? Like, oh, your daughter's, isn't that cute? Your daughter's with this guy, isn't that cute? Isn't that a bit of a flirtation?
Well, maybe. Yeah, maybe. But here's the thing. If we're going with your thought about this, that maybe there's something there under the surface, that these people are working in concert to prepare Paige, then wouldn't it be really interesting if Elizabeth was in on it?
I don't think she's in on that part of it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that knowing look between the two of them could mean that.
Yeah, but Elizabeth, when that dude gave her the look, like, oh, isn't this cute? She gave him the look like, like, don't look at me like that. She was polite, but I don't think she was, like, giving him the wink back, like, aha, things working just the way we want it to.
Oh,
but she was uncomfortable.
Oh, okay. So, I don't know. I didn't really take that from the scene, but I guess because we were both looking at it in a different way, my logic didn't follow that. It'll be interesting to see.
So next we see Frank Langella come in, Gabriel, their father figure. I guess he was their former trainer and potentially could be their new handler. Gabriel. But he lives in an odd place, Jamie. It's oddly poor. He has like a crappy card table for his kitchen table. But he's very elegant. Like, that meal he was preparing was very elegant. He had the wine and he had the nice salad. And he looked like a he looked classier than the place he lived in.
Well, I don't know about the yeah, certainly the card table, that was a weird kind of, you know, kind of an out of place thing. But I think that place where he lived is like incredible because it was so expansive. I mean, it was huge. And I'm assuming that they're living in like, you know, in like that, you know, D.C. kind of, you know, Virginia, Maryland area. And that's not a cheap area. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know because he did. You're right. The card table thing was a little weird, but that place seemed like a very nice place. So I don't know.
So they bring him some nice ice cream, Frusenglaja, Frozen Joy, Swedish ice cream. And Elizabeth, now, okay, so now we've got these clues we've got to follow very closely, Jamie, about Elizabeth and Philip. Elizabeth lies to Gabriel right away about Paige having no boyfriends. Because this is right off the scene we just talked about, right?
Right, but that's not her boy. See, I didn't take it that way. That's to me, that's not Paige having a boyfriend. To me, Paige having a boyfriend is some boy comes over, you know, to home and watches TV with her and that kind of stuff. So I don't think Elizabeth was lying. I think that, you know, they were just doing the catch-up thing, but it was still like something to the way I took it was he was catching up and, you know, she was saying no boyfriend yet, but the audience is supposed to think, yeah, but that's right there on the precipice. And then we remember the potential boyfriend so that we remember him again later. I don't know. That's the way I took it.
Maybe. I think it was a clear or a subtle, maybe not clear, a lie to Gabriel.
A
shadowing of the truth that she was keeping from Gabriel. Anyway, Gabriel actually makes it clear it's Reagan and wants to turn Afghanistan into Vietnam. And he starts to talk about Paige, and Philip backs him down right away. But Elizabeth seems to back him up. I think Elizabeth is feeding him what he wants to hear, and she even says that later. I think she really was, like, spoon-feeding him. I think Gabriel's a big bad heavy in this, and I think she knows it, and she's protecting Paige from him.
I don't know. I think that you might be right about that, but I also think that it's possible that Elizabeth is playing both sides against the middle, because I really think she wants to recruit Paige, and I really think that that part of what she told to Gabriel is true, and I think that part of what she told to Philip is a lie, and her saying, I don't know what you're talking about, he asked me and I was telling him what he needed to hear, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I'm withholding my judgment on that one.
Okay. Well, Philip is angry at this point after this is all over. He's angry with Elizabeth for it became apparent to Philip that she's been playing him. Like, you didn't really think our family was the most important. You really did think Paige had to be recruited. So he berates her for all this bullshit you've been feeding to me. And she says, I just told him what he needs to hear.
Right.
So what was in the package in the kitchen? I've already forgotten. Did we find out in this show that she took from the drawer? Gabriel tells her to pick up a package from the drawer. Was that the tape?
That was the tape.
All right. Well, we'll talk about the tape in a second. Okay, more comic relief, and it's really sad that a sex scene has to be comic relief, but Clark. Well, yeah, okay. I'm calling these both comic relief. We're not at Martha and Clark yet, so that is comic. But Martha and Stan.
Oh, yeah.
I think Martha and Stan are going to be a couple. I think they're going to hook it up. Here's your Ladysmith Chekhov's gun.
Yeah,
Jamie, it makes its appearance, and Stan's helping her shoot, like a guy helping a girl on a date, helping her shoot, learn how to use that gun. Yeah. And she's digging it. She teaches him. Whenever a guy teaches a girl something or a girl teaches a guy something, it brings them closer. And I think they made that point on this little scene with Stan and Martha.
Yeah, you know, I you might be right, because I really thought that that scene was really cute. And they looked like they were having a really good time. And he really helped her, so I don't know.
Yeah, so I'll give that one comic relief, but I would expect to see more of Stan and Martha.
Okay, well, I mean, they work together, so it's entirely possible.
Now, Philip with Annalise. Do you remember, what do you remember about Annalise?
Okay, so Annalise, I remember her from first season a lot, from the pilot in particular. She's married to somebody who works, who's got a high position within the government, the United States government. And Annalise was messing around with Philip. She calls him something else. He's got a different name.
Scott.
Okay. And so they were having an affair, and he was using her for information because of her husband. And later on, after things were done between the two of them, because she was really in love with him, and he wasn't, you know, of course, with her. And they stopped speaking to each other. And then at some point, he called her back in because he needed somebody to bring in to deal with that, the guy who was, I guess, Pakistani or Indian Pakistani dignitary, the one that she was messing around with. And so he brought her in and he trained her how to get information out of him. And Elizabeth and Philip had had some discussion about whether or not Annalise would be a good asset. And Philip won the argument. He thought she would be. And so that's what ended up happening. And so now when she meets with Philip this time to update him, you know, that she's doing that as his basically his trained agent.
Yeah. And that guy was is Yusuf, the Pakistani. This is a Pakistani military guy at this point.
Yeah,
he was like a hotshot cricket player, right. You know, world...
An ambassador, right? Isn't he like an ambassador or something?
Yeah, some high-ranking Pakistani government official. But he's like a dashing man about town,
right.
You know, athletic, good-looking guy.
Right.
Yeah, so she still likes Philip, but she's fallen in love with this guy, Yusuf, who she's been trained to spy on and to get information from. She's in love with him.
Right.
But after... But when she tries to tell Yusuf something about how she was sent to spy on, I think she tells him this, right? She was sent to spy on him, but she's really on his side. He just says, screw this, and strangles her.
Right.
Yeah, and Philip hears this through the room. Now, did Philip's listening to Yusuf and Annalise through the wall, and he knew Annalise was in trouble, right? He took his time to get through to the next room. He didn't barge in on them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was a really tough scene to watch because I knew what was happening to her on the other side of the wall. And I thought that he should have been able to tell because he could hear a lot of what was going on. And I guess maybe he couldn't really hear exactly the conversation. But, you know, I would have thought that he would have heard more of the sort of alarmed nature of what was happening there before the lamp hit the floor and he knew that he should go over there. It was really slow. And you know, and I don't know. I mean, because it really does kind of put a question in your mind about his motives just because of what happens at the end of the scene.
Didn't he put Annalise with Yusuf so Elizabeth didn't have to go with Yusuf? Like he saved Elizabeth from a sexual encounter with this guy?
I think that there was something about that. There was something, yeah. I can't recall if it was he wanted to keep her from doing it, But I think you're right.
And maybe that just maybe this cleans that up for him. But I think he was deliberately slow in responding to the trouble that he knew was going on in that room right next door. I mean, he's walking through the hallway, and then when he sees it, he's just like, just what I thought. Like, he's not shocked, or he doesn't jump in and start fighting with Yusef. He just kind of accepts it.
Well, here's what I think. I think that maybe he wanted to really gain access to this guy. Maybe he wants Yusef for something else. Maybe he wants to turn him. Maybe he wants to turn him into, like a spy. And if he's going to do that, this is quite a thing to have over his head.
Yeah, that's a good point. So poor Annalise was just a pawn.
Maybe.
All right, so next we see Elizabeth with that tape, and we find out, and Elizabeth finds out her mother is sick. And we don't hear it. It's Russian. We hear it, but I don't know what the hell it says. But Elizabeth probably won't get to see her. She can't go flying back to Moscow or Kiev or wherever her mother is to see her. She's probably not going to ever see her again. Right. But there's got to be some very strong emotions within Elizabeth about the whole thing with her pushing Paige and how her mother... Now, her mother had to be a spy, too, right, to push Elizabeth into this whole game way back.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't think so, because the mother has this whole life at home, with her uncle, and, you know, she says things like, I'm so glad that they get this message to you, and things like that. I don't think her mother's a spy. I don't think so.
So you think she just had a rough childhood and...
I think Elizabeth was recruited. I think she was recruited maybe because of, you know, showing certain traits, you know, personality traits and intelligence traits when she was in grade school, you know, because that's really kind of how, governments, you know, pick out people anyway. They, you know, they do personality tests and intelligence tests and that kind of stuff on kids in, institutionalized environments. And, you know, when they have a certain amount of, I guess, you know, scores or whatever, they decide, you know, when they're going to approach somebody once they reach the age of
14.
Consent. Once they have 14. Once they reach the age of consent. I think in this country it's like college age, like 18 or above. I think she was recruited. I think her mom's just like a regular person, unless her mom is
Claudia.
Yeah, Claudia. Like I think there's something really under the surface there with Claudia. I don't think it's really her mom, but I think that that there's something there, and I'm curious to know what it is. But I guess she won't see her mom again. I think you're right.
Next, we see two of the romantic relationship development scenes, I thought. But Philip is snooping around the kitchen in his house for some snack, and he sees the brownies, and Elizabeth and Paige are making brownies to go to some potluck at the church. But they won't let Philip have any because they're for the church. And he's like, oh, can't you cut them up and give me one? He's mad that he doesn't get a brownie. Right. And then we jump right to a scene with Stan going to see Sandra, his ex-wife, brings her some of her stuff, I guess, from the house. She's in another house. But Stan sucks up to her, Jamie. He wants her to think that he likes this whole Est thing that he and Philip went to.
Right.
And she sees right through it. So, Jamie, one thing I've learned as a guy, guys need to take a stand. Whether you're right or wrong or it's an unpopular stand, to be respected by people, especially women, guys need to take a stand. And even if that person doesn't agree with you, and doesn't like the stand that you're taking, you need to take a stand. You cannot be wishy-washy. And Sandra sees right through Stan and says, you're just saying this because you think I want to hear it. And that was what was wrong with our whole relationship. And then Stan comes clean and he says, yeah, you're right. That EST meeting sucked. I hated every minute of it.
Yeah. And then what does she do? She shoots him down. Oh, well, that was what was wrong with our marriage in the first place. You're too negative or whatever she said. And then
she says it was that you didn't take a stand.
No, that was like, okay. Oh, okay. 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 Okay.
And so he says, yeah, okay, I'll tell you my true stand. I didn't like that meat. I didn't like Est. I thought it was stupid.
Right, right, right. And then she says, because that's the part that I was saying, she said that was what was wrong, you know, in our marriage or something like that. Like, I don't remember what she said exactly there, but I just remember, like, when she walked away, she kind of had a smile on her face. And Stan was standing there like, golly, what in the heck? And I was thinking, he can't win.
Like, well, he can't win. I think he might have won a little bit more if he would have just said, hey, you know, by the way, I went to Est and it blew, man. I would never go to another Est meeting in my life. I think she would have looked at him with a little bit more admiration and said, well, thanks for finally telling me the truth and telling me exactly what you feel about something without hiding your feelings from me and telling me something wishy-washy that you think will pacify me. Because I think that was the problem with their relationship.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay, so, well, yeah, along with him never being there. But, and I agree with you. I think that that was the problem, you know, in the scene. But what he did was tell her. Like after she said that to him, he told her what he really thought, and that still wasn't good enough.
Right.
Like, she still walked out on him. And, like, for me, like, when I saw that, I was just like, wow. You know, I mean, for him, to my mind, that was a philosophical moment. Like, for him to say, well, gosh, you know, for me to be who I am and tell the truth about what I really think is not good enough for her. So maybe I'm just not for her.
At this time, it's probably not good enough to recover from whatever they've been through. But I think she does – admire a little bit that he finally came clean in that scene. Like, okay, at least you told me that it was something you didn't like. Because she kind of smiles, but it's too late for them anyway. She's not going to fold over and say, oh, thank you for being honest. Now we can go back together. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Right. It's sad. And he wants her back. So not much he can do.
All right, now for our comic scene. This is the sex scene with Martha. Philip's trying to read the book. I guess it's what, Kama Sutra? But it's painful to watch these two together. Jesus. What do you think about this scene?
All right. So I don't know what it is about me, but when I look at a broad scene of anything, whether it's reality or if it's on television or whatever it is, sometimes I don't really see whatever the focus of it is. I'll see like a jumble of color or motion or, you know, whatever it is before I can focus in to see whatever it is I'm supposed to be seeing there, whatever's at the center. And so when I first saw this, I didn't realize what they were doing. I was looking at the book and the color in the room and the, you know, whole thing. And then I realized, oh, wait, there are two naked people kind of stuck together in the middle of this scene, right? And so, you know, I was looking at it, and I was just like, what in the world? Like, what the heck is this? But I laughed, as I'm assuming that we were all supposed to. But it just kind of brought to mind again this whole thing with Philip. You know, whether he's being Clark or he's being, who's the other guy, Steve or Stan? What was his name with Annalise?
Scott.
Or whatever persona he's having sex with all these women, and he's got to be a different person for all of these women, you know? And he comes home, and he can't be Clark with Elizabeth, and it's just like this whole thing. So, you know, he's got like this store of sexual personality, I guess, you know, that he has to pull out and use on different people for different reasons and different circumstances. And, you know, so now he's getting all Kama Sutra'd up with
Martha.
You know, and I personally, what I was thinking at the time was, you know, he shouldn't tell Elizabeth about this because she'll want to do it and it won't work. So.
Next we see Oleg spying on Stan, right? Is that what I got? He's like looking at him through his car.
Okay,
so Oleg must be in the DC area.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yes, that's right. And I wondered about that because Oleg wasn't, okay, so he was spying on Stan, but wasn't Philip also spying on Stan? Like, didn't we see Philip, like, roll out with the car? Or was that only Stan? Because it looked to me in the scene, like, Oleg was sitting there in the car, and then he's looking for Stan, but then somebody else comes out with a car, and then Oleg makes a face. I thought Philip was also following Stan.
Maybe. That second part of it, I didn't catch in the show.
So I don't know. I need to go back and rewatch it and try to see if I can pick up whether that was. Because if it was, then that was also a little bit of comic relief. And it gives us a little bit of background on, you know, what Philip does with his time. You know, another thing that he does, you know, following his neighbor.
Right. Yeah. So now Elizabeth gives Philip the brownie. She does save a brownie for him and tells him about her mom. And they really bond over this. I mean, I think they're really trying to show that Elizabeth has a lot of kick left in this marriage. She really does have she does place a lot of importance on the marriage, and it's not just a spy game for her.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like Elizabeth is really invested in her marriage and in her family life. Well, actually, I guess I should say that really my feeling is that she's invested in Philip. And she's invested in Paige and Henry, and maybe not necessarily to those particular institutions, you know, quote-unquote marriage, quote-unquote family, but that she's invested in them as people.
Yeah, they're not just pieces on a chessboard or a Stratego board. They are people in her life that she feels secure with Philip, and he comforts her, and she wants to show him affection. And there is more than just a spy game.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of like, you know, part of what I take away from that. And then also part of like what I was trying to say is kind of like I think I'm trying to justify my thoughts about Elizabeth doing what she's doing, because I really believe that Elizabeth has got her own agenda. I think that she is grooming Paige. I think that she really wants for Paige to follow in her footsteps. I think she sees it as an answer and not a danger the way that Philip sees it. And I think that she's going to do what she wants to do.
Well, I think she probably thinks it's honorable for Paige to do that. But I think that's evolving. I think Elizabeth's view of Paige may change as we go through this season.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I think that Elizabeth is going to be shown to have some very different motives than what they may seem on the surface. And I think that her whole just very extreme understanding of her purpose in life, I think is going to be very much on the forefront this season. I think it's good. I think we're going to see her motivations and her actions reflecting her beliefs in a way that is very, very, very clear. And I think we'll see it frequently, much more than we have in the past.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like Philip's interpretation of Paige's life, the value to Paige, her life is like to be free and to make choices. And like, we're almost there. She's almost there. She can go to college and she can be free from this. And Elizabeth's view of Paige's life is like, you can be devoted to this. You can do something really important with your life for this cause, the Russian family, and help the country and, you know, be dedicated to it. And she cares about Paige, but she thinks the best thing Paige could do is like this helping the cause. And Philip thinks the best thing she could be is to be free and to be a, like, independent person. And
well, yeah, I mean, I think that Philip has this idea that he wants for Paige to just have a normal life. And I think that he's in denial because I don't think she'll ever have a normal life. Well, you know, I think she could have close to it, but I don't think her life will ever be normal because she's got two parents who are spies. And but I think that what Philip wants for her is a lot better than what Elizabeth wants for her.
Yeah, a lot different, at least, for sure. So what's this little scene about this Gad and Stan talk about this lady from the Canada Institute who puts a note into the Russian car window of a Russian diplomat or Russian political person? What did you take from that?
I don't know. I mean, I played that scene over like three times. The only thing that I pulled from it was that this is an asset that they are saying she's not safe because, you know, just because she's in America doesn't mean that she's safe from either being, you know, discovered by, I don't know, by Canada, maybe. I don't know. But she's, I guess, you know, she's willing to spy for Russia and give information for Russia. And they're trying to keep her safe. They're trying to keep her from being discovered or captured.
Maybe it just shows that there's people like this woman, Charlotte, that we saw in the beginning, who worked for the CIA. There's people like that all over, like disgruntled employees that at the right moment could be switched into, like, you know, giving their company or their country the big FU. And because that's what Charlotte almost literally said, right? Fuck the CIA.
Right.
Out of anger.
Right. And, you know, and that's what that was the same thing, I believe, that happened with that Kevin from The Office looking guy from last season. I think that he was one of those people, too, who was originally just a regular old grunt, just an employee of the government going and doing his thing and got disgruntled somehow and then just decided to, you know, to share secrets. And then, you know, last season we saw the same thing. There was another guy who was a walk-in at the residence who did the same thing. And so, I think that's where a lot of these people come from. They get disgruntled, and then they decide, okay, well, or they have ideals that don't mesh with, you know, what the government's doing, and they decide to take a really extreme position, you know, in defending what they believe is right.
Yeah, well, Kevin was a no-brainer. I mean, come on, Dunder Mifflin, you'd flip too. So next we see a quick little exercise of Elizabeth getting followed by a car, and she's trying to lose the car, and then she stops and waits for the car, and it looks like a little practice exercise of how to follow people. And Elizabeth talks to the guy who was in the car following her, and it's this guy named Hans. I don't think we've seen him before. Do you remember him from any other parts of this show before?
Right, no, I don't. And so here's the thing. That's why I was thinking earlier that maybe Elizabeth is doing some behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't know about right now, and maybe we're going to find out later. Because that dude, Hans, when I saw him, I thought he was somebody from the church. And, you know, she's got this thing going on with him, and she's training him, but we don't know him from anywhere. And he looks too young to be a spy that's been sent over by the center. So where'd he come from and where does he belong? He has no context.
Yeah, I read this article. This guy that does reviews on TV shows, his name is Alan Sepinwall. Mm-hmm. And he gets screeners. So I think he's seen a few episodes of The Americans already, like maybe up through episode four. Mm-hmm. And he said Hans is from South Africa. So I don't think we learned that in this first episode, but I guess this guy Sepinwall knows that he's from South Africa from something he sees coming up. But that's about all I know about him. He's Hans from South Africa, and it looks like he's getting trained by Elizabeth and spy shadowing somebody in a car. Mm-hmm. Next we see Henry and Paige. They're sharing the TV for shows. Looks like Henry's done with his show. He calls Paige over. It's your turn. You can watch your show. Mm-hmm. We see a little commercial for Hershey's Kisses, I guess.
Yeah.
From the 80s. And then the quick little news blurb that Brezhnev is dead. So that's the time reference.
Right.
This doesn't interest Paige at all. She just flips right through it looking for her show.
Right.
She switches channels.
Jeffersons.
It's interesting, though, that for all we're worried about for Paige and her future and all this pretty big news, like your president of your country is dead. She's like, oh, well, whatever. What's going on the Jeffersons?
Right. She doesn't know that's her president.
Yeah.
Her president is President Reagan.
Yep.
You know? And so, yeah, so she's just chilling on the sofa. That's her whole thing. And, you know, she's going to watch the Jeffersons and, you know, have a few laughs and then go maybe pick on her brother and do some homework and think about her future boyfriend at the church.
Yeah, exactly. She may not even care that Reagan's her president. She's a 14-year-old kid, you know, who cares at that age?
Yeah, I mean, and she's a smart kid. And when Reagan was shot in, I guess that was season one, she was upset about it. But, you know, I mean, again, it's, you know, she's 14, like what you said. And so, you know, I don't know that we should expect anything of her, you know, more than that. But, you know, what was really interesting to me is that as much as everyone was kind of hanging on the edges of their seats, waiting to see what was going to happen with Paige, Paige didn't have too much to do in this episode.
She didn't. She was just kind of coming and going to the fun little events and stuff.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting, too.
So we had a little bit of a history wrestling last time, Jamie. We were trying to figure out what happened after Brezhnev, and we were talking about Mikhail Gorbachev.
Right. Did you look it up?
Did you too?
I did, and I don't have it open right now, but tell me what you learned.
Well, I can't remember the names, but I think Andropov was one, but there were a couple.
Yeah.
Within about a year to two-year span, there were a couple presidents that took the place after Brezhnev before Mikhail Gorbachev.
Right.
And then I think Reagan finally was the one who said, or Gorbachev was the one he said it to when he said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." That was Gorbachev.
Was it Reagan or was it Bush? I thought it was Bush. Bush the first who said,
"Tear down the wall." I thought that was Reagan, wasn't it?
It was Reagan? Okay. All right. So yeah, I'm looking at the timeline now. It's Brezhnev, then Andropov was there for like 2 years, and then Khrushchev. Right. And and then Gorbachev. Gorby came in like 85.
And Gorby was the guy with the hammer and sickles.
Right.
Freckle on his head, forehead.
Right.
Perfect casting. But that was the end of this episode, the first episode of season three. So, Jamie, how can people reach you on Twitter if they want to talk to you?
I'm at Word Girly. Word Girly.
Okay. And my handle is at Scathing Tweets, and our website is West Coast Project, and this is The Americans. So we have a little bit of a spoiler section. I got a little bit of this, Jamie, from the previews from next episode.
Okay.
So we can speculate a little bit here, and people don't want to hear it, they can switch off. But I saw a couple scenes, Jamie, for the previews where it looks like Elizabeth is getting caught.
Really?
Yeah, looks like she's finally getting caught. And maybe that was what was kind of tainted my review of this episode, because I think we talked a little bit about it where Philip may have to save her.
Okay.
And it looks like she's getting caught. But now things have, of course, looked certain ways before, and they're totally different or they're totally meaningless. But that was one of the previews that I saw that seemed rather important on the preview.
Okay, well, I guess we have to wait till next week to find out.
Another one I saw was, it looks like somebody's holding a gun on Stan.
Oh, really?
And there's Martha again with the ladysmith.
What is she doing with it?
She's not at the target range. She's like looking at it from, you know, just she has it in her hand somewhere. It's not like practice. It's like she's really looking like she's going to use it.
Oh, no. Okay.
So I don't want to leave you worried for a week, but...
Well, you did it, so now you're just going to have to live with it.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Okay, Jamie, so next week we'll talk about episode 2, Baggage.
All right, sounds great.
And until then, we'll sign off on our review of The Americans.